I'd like to welcome everyone to the product information call with Christian Jopot. Most of you, I think, are all familiar with Christian. He is the Chief Science Officer of StemTech Health Sciences, and he received his Bachelor of Science degree in Neurophysiology from McGill, which is in Montreal, and also received his Master's degree from the Department of Neurology and Neurosurgery from the Montreal Neurological Institute. He has been doing research for over 13 years in the fields of natural foods and nutrition, and is here today to join us and go over a specific topic. Christian,
Thank you. Thank you, Sharon. One thing that I wanted to talk, what I thought would be appropriate to talk about today, is the how the product is harvested, where does it come from, and different aspects related to the environment from which AFA is coming from, because harvest is starting just as we speak. So right now, boats are in the lake, and we're in full force. So let's talk a little bit about Klamath Lake. Klamath Lake, there's something very special about Klamath Lake that has a significance or a relevance here in AFA itself, the abundance of the growth that we have there. There's something unique about Klamath Lake. When we compare, I wouldn't say to all other lakes in the world, but to the majority of the other lakes in the world, is that the lake is in the Klamath, what we call the Klamath Basin, which is in line with this whole chain of mountains. We have Mount St. Helens that blew up, a few decades ago. Then we have Mount Hood, we have Mount Bachelor, we have Mount Scott, we have Crater Lake just before, which was Mount Mazama that did explode. We have Mount Scott, we have Mount McLaughlin, Mount Shasta, a little sister mountain from Shasta, did explode also a few thousand years ago. And it goes down like this going south, and this is a whole chain of volcanic mountains. So it's a very, very high volcanic area. The town of Klamath Falls is heated, probably a third of the town is heated with geothermals. So it is a very, very hot area in terms of the underground, and yet the water, and I'll come back to that in a few minutes, the water coming off the ground is about 37, 38 degrees Celsius. It's like the temperature of your refrigerator. So there's a lot of things that are not really explained in Klamath Lake or in the Klamath Basin that gives a lot of uniqueness to the part, which at times really have a meaning in terms of what we get with AFA. So if I come back to the origin like this of Klamath Lake, being a volcanic area, Klamath Lake did not go through ice ages like most other places in North America. It's believed that Klamath Lake was formed about a million years ago when there was a sort of a big sea there that was split. And then slowly we have Upper Klamath Lake and Lower Klamath Lake. People may be familiar with the term Upper Klamath Lake. It's today sort of irrelevant because the lower does not exist anymore. But historically, there was an Upper Klamath Lake and a Lower Klamath Lake. And the Lower Klamath Lake has dried and is now just all farmlands. But Upper Klamath Lake, or what is referred as Upper Klamath Lake, still exists. And the reason why all of this is relevant is that obviously during a summer, or let's call it spring, summer, and fall, during the drier, when the lake is open, we obviously have all kinds of life forms, leaves, birds, all kinds of things that float in the lake and then degrade and then become sediments at the bottom of the lake. So in most lake, we get a few inches, maybe a foot of sediments coming from a few, 10,000 years of accumulation. In Klamath Lake, we have a million years of accumulation like this of sediments, and it gives a layer of sediment that is about 30 feet. So it is well known that Klamath Lake is not very deep. The average depth is about 8 feet. The median is about 5 feet. So the word here for anybody that goes on the lake is that if your boat tips, just stand up and you're fine, but don't move, because if you start to move, then you're going to go through the sediments. So there's about 30 feet like this of sediments in the bottom of Klamath Lake. And on top of this, 7,000 years ago, Mount Mazama, which is today Crater Lake, did explode, and it was one of the greatest volcanic eruption that we have seen on Earth, with ashes going as far as covering 7 states, going up to Canada, Calgary, and all these areas. So it covered more than 1,000 miles of ashes like this. So nearby in the Klamath Basin, there was a very, very thick layer of volcanic ash that was spread all around. And so you have like this at the bottom of Klamath Lake and in the Klamath Basin, not only sediments that have accumulated for a long time, but also a very, very rich source of minerals. And all of this really contribute to the growth of Klamath Lake, of AFA in Klamath Lake. Because the growth of AFA in Klamath Lake, we do find AFA other places in the world. Not only this, but I would go as far as to say that Klamath Lake is actually found in many, many, many places in the world. It's almost ubiquitous. You go in almost any lake and you would find some levels of AFA. But most of the time, you look in the water, and after observing for a few minutes, then you can see, oh, here's a strand, or here's a little piece of AFA. Lakes where you get it into really, really large quantity are more rare. And when you do have something like this, oftentimes it's related to pollution. And because pollution does bring nutrient, and then these nutrients are then used by the AFA to grow. What we have in Klamath Lake, and that is what is so special, is that there is not in Klamath Lake this kind of pollution that feeds AFA. There is, at the northern end of the lake, some grazing. There's no fertilizer spreading. There's none of these. It's just grazing, which has been, for the most part, removed from Klamath Lake. So it simply brings additional nutrients to the lake, which is not good for drinking water, not good for the fish, but outside from this, it's just nutrients here for AFA. We call it organic fertilizer when we put it on our carrots. When it goes in the lake, it's still organic fertilizer for algae, but obviously it affects other forms of life, so that's why sometimes it is called pollution. But in terms of industrial pollution, there's nothing that really that comes in Klamath Lake. But aside from this, what is unique to Klamath Lake is that historically, there has been algae growth way before there was any of these human activities that will bring nutrients like this to the lake. And that is really what makes Klamath Lake unique. Before any kind of human activities in other lakes, there was no blue-green algae growing in these lakes. It's really human activities and pollution that has brought this. In Klamath Lake, it's a whole different story. It is the thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of years of accumulation of just natural degradation of life forms, leaves, and what I was talking about before, that brings what is needed for AFA to grow. We have reports, for example, in 1906, which was before any significant human presence around Klamath Lake. I mean, how could I say, contemporary human presence. There was obviously natives there, but they were not affecting the environment in any way, like what we talk about today in terms of farming. So at the time, with no effect like this on the lake in 1906, explorers have reported finding green ice on the shore of Klamath Lake. When we know the kind of environment around Klamath Lake, when we hit the end of August, early September and on, we can easily have during the day something like 60, 65, 70 degrees, and at night the temperature can go down to 20 degrees. And when we have those kinds of extremes in temperature, we can get like this ice on the shoreline when there is still algae in the lake. Algae will bloom until November. So knowing this dynamic, we can understand why people could have time found like this green ice. There's also a report in 1906 of a fish kill, many, many hundreds of fish like this floating at the surface of the lake, which is a direct consequence of algae growth. When algae grows, it produces oxygen at the surface, which does not get in the water, it goes in the air, but when algae sinks in the lake, it then utilizes oxygen and then removes oxygen from the water, so we end up with a situation of extremely low oxygen that makes it very difficult for the fish to survive. And again, this dynamic is very well known in Klamath Lake. So we add from 1896 report of a situation like this, and I became aware not too long ago of core samples of the sediments that were taken at the bottom of Klamath Lake, which is accumulation here during tens of thousands of years, and where they have isolated throughout the entire column fossils of AFA, and at times just cells of AFA that if they got access to the water would simply start back into a new bloom. Viable aconites, these are the cells that are responsible for sleeping over the winter and basically feeding back another bloom the year after. So these were found in the sediments like this. So really, at this point in time, there's no telling as to when blue-green algae started to grow in Klamath Lake, but it's something that has been there for a very long time. So we have it now in Klamath Lake. There's another aspect about the water that is worth mentioning. I've talked about this, I believe, in another call. But as I was mentioning, we are in a volcanic area. The water, in theory, we do have a lot of hot springs in the area. Some of them has been actually developed somewhat where we can go and sit in them, and I mean, the water will come out of the ground at close to 100 degrees, and yet when we look at the springs that are feeding the water to Klamath Lake, we're talking about water coming off the ground at literally 37, 38 degrees Fahrenheit, 5 degrees Celsius, which is pretty much the optimal water, the temperature for water, extremely cold. The pH is 8, and when we think about pH, what brings pH or elevates pH in water is the presence of mineral. And when we analyze the water, it does not have any mineral. So you think that if water is going to travel like this in volcanic soils, it should pick up a lot of minerals. So there are some mysteries here in this water. And probably the main mystery is the fact that we have pH 8 without minerals. And the only place where we can see something like this is when the actual physical structure of water has been altered in what has been seen, for example, with the Hunza, a people living in the north of Pakistan. And they have a very, very well-documented extreme longevity. And it's not understood why, and the main reason is believed to be the source of water that they drink from, which comes from under glacier, where water is exposed to millions of tons of pressure that does changes the actual physical property of the water, the angle between hydrogen and oxygen, and makes a molecule of water that has a greater dipole. I won't get into the technicality of it, but basically it makes water that has a very low surface tension. It makes it extremely, extremely hydrating for the body, facilitate absorption of nutrients, facilitate the cellular function. It's an extremely healthy and antioxidant water. And that's what we get here in the water flowing into Klamath Lake. So AFA grows in that kind of water. And if you take one signature of this that is left in AFA or in Stem Enhance, we got a test done not too long ago. If you take Stem Enhance and just blend it in water and let it sit for not too long, 15, 20 minutes, and then you measure what is called the redox potential, the ability of water to be a strong antioxidant, we get readings that are literally off the chart, that are probably as high as anything else that has been seen. So that ability here of maintaining this antioxidant property is maintained in the product itself. So these are all very interesting aspects of AFA. Now, if we jump itself into the harvesting of it, so we have all these properties which some part explain why we have such an abundance of AFA in Klamath Lake. And the other thing that is unique also in Klamath Lake is that we have not only an abundance of AFA, but it's a monoculture, meaning that AFA grows there alone. There are other species of blue-green algae growing in Klamath Lake, but they're very minimal in the big picture. We're having 99% plus AFA growing in Klamath Lake, and this is another unique aspect of Klamath Lake. Most other lakes, where AFA grows, we have also with AFA other types of species of blue-green algae, and some of them are not suitable for consumption. So again, Klamath Lake provides a unique opportunity there. So when it blooms, we go into the bloom with barges and basically collects algae from the surface, as people can see in the new DVD, the Stemtec story that was just released at the June event. If you have not seen this this DVD, I really recommend that you get a copy of it and look for it or watch it, because it really shows some good footage here of how algae is taken in the lake. And the reason why I bring this up is to also cover an aspect that oftentimes people are asking, why is Stem Enhance or AFA so much more expensive than other types of algae like spirulina, for example? And there are very, very good reasons for this, linked to how the product it grows and how we need to go and get it. Spirulina is grown in ponds. By the way, before I get in this, we do not get with spirulina, and we have tried it, we do not get the effect on stem cells. So it's not that the product can be compared in terms of its effect on the body, but it oftentimes, because both are blue-green algae, oftentimes people bring it up as a point of comparison. And what we have here with spirulina is that we need to grow it in, well, not need to, but it's grown in ponds, human-made ponds that are most of the time developed in areas where you have growth all year round. In Southern California, in Hawaii, in India, in Africa, this is where you get most of the production of spirulina. So you create a pond, you harvest from the pond literally every day, so you have an infrastructure in terms of harvesting capability, filtration capability, drying capability that fits the daily intake or the daily harvest, the daily production, your daily capacity. When we go in Klamath Lake, what we have is that we have a growth season that is literally about 4 months long. And in these 4 months, we're harvesting here on a lake that is about 25 miles long and about 8 miles wide at its widest. And it is north-south. It is in the sense that a lot of the winds are coming in the Klamath Basin. So it is not rare to have a 3-4 foot wave on Klamath Lake. If the water just moves a little bit on Klamath Lake, then the algae gets spread or mixed in the water column. Remember, it's a lake that is very shallow. So when there's wind like this on the lake, it literally rotates the lake like a blender. So when the water is turned like this, obviously all the algae is throughout the column, and we can't harvest in these conditions. So at the end, typically in one season harvest season, typically we have about 25 days of harvest, of real harvest. And so we need to harvest our annual supply, our annual need. We need to get it in 25 days. So that means compared to an outfit like a spirulina outfit that would harvest like this every day, unaffected by weather, unaffected by the elements, we need to have an infrastructure that is going to be about 15 times bigger, so that in those 25 days we can literally go and grab everything that would be needed in a year. So it means in terms of energy generators, in terms of filtration capacity, everything is magnified in terms of equipment. And then when it's produced or when it's not harvested in a pond that is right by the filtration unit, right by the dryer. We are in the middle of a lake, 15 miles in water. So the expense of going and getting this in a boat, so you have the ability of having boats that will carry so much product. Right now we have on the lake, for example, two boats that have the capacity of carrying 15,000 gallon. The size of these boats is quite amazing. And these boats were each about $500,000. I will leave it there. I'm just giving you here the big picture of the cost of producing this product. The fact that we can keep it that low actually is kind of an impressive feat, and we're keeping working on this. But just to give you an idea that there's really the difference here in price is entirely driven by the fact that the product is harvested in completely different condition and requires a much greater capital investment, which is used for 25 days, maybe 50 days in the year, and the rest of the year it just sits there with no use, and that obviously means a lot of cost. So that is what I wanted to share with you this week, Sharon. Do you have any question about any of it?
Not at all, and thank you very much. It's good to know the differences in the uniqueness of Klamath Lake and how it's all harvested. So I thank you very much for sharing that. We do have a couple of questions, and one of them actually relates to this topic. And the first question was, now that it's summer, does heat affect the product when it's shipped? That fits right in with what you were just talking about.
Okay. Yes and no. In terms of the effect on stem cells and PEA and the polysaccharide, the effect on the immune system, any of these, heat is not going to affect it. The anti-inflammatory properties with phycocyanin, this is not going to be affected with the kind of heat that we're talking about. This being said, there is some aspects that could be affected by heat, and the main one, at this point in time, the only one that I'm really aware of, is enzymatic activity, which is an important concept in health, but at the same time, here when we're talking about AFA or Stem Enhance and the kind of health benefits that we're talking about in terms of the effect on the mind, immune system, inflammation, stem cells, it is not something that is that pertinent. And the other one is chlorophyll. If the product, sometimes you receive it and it looks a little bit bluer than it should, then that's because the chlorophyll has been degraded, the green has been degraded, and really chlorophyll is an important nutrient, but again, not in with any reference here to what we see in terms of the effect on inflammation, on stem cells, or on the mind, on mental clarity. And also, all of this being said, it will take a lot of heat for a long time, and probably not what you see in a UPS truck in the summer. Historically, we've done a lot of these tests, and it is not enough to really degrade chlorophyll in a dried product. It takes much longer time. So the simple answer to the question is there's no worry with Stem Enhance here, with any of its main nutrients, with anything pertaining to the biological effect that we know of Stem Enhance that will be affected by the kind of heat that we see in a UPS truck in the summer.
Okay, great. Thank you. The next question is a two-part question. Would the use of Stem Enhance support a person during chemotherapy? And the second part is, can a person produce their own stem cells after chemo such that Stem Enhance will be helpful after the process?
Okay, this just to make sure here, this is not medical advice, just information about the product and about the whole process here. After chemotherapy, if all the stem cells have been killed, which is something that we have to assume took place, then there is definitely the need for a transplant. And once the transplant has taken place, then Stem Enhance could play a good role here of stimulating the whole system. So it could be good after. During the chemotherapy, I have no knowledge of what the product could do for stem cells during that time. However, the product does contain products that are well-known and somewhat documented for their effect in supporting the immune system, which could be very beneficial during chemotherapy to help support the body. But this is not an area where I can go. I cannot give those kinds of medical advice. So I would say see with your doctor about taking a dietary supplement that has strong antioxidant properties as you go to chemotherapy.
Okay, good. Thank you. The last question is, I recently started taking Stem Enhance, and the next day I started having problems with diarrhea. Is this a normal side effect? And if so, why did this occur, and how long should it last?
Okay. It is something that I have heard a few people have reported this. Not that many, but enough here to understand that it is something that some people will experience. And it is not, I just want to make this very, very clear, it is not because Stem Enhance contains anything here that is a contaminant, because I can tell you, I can take any of these bottles, I can eat the whole bottle, and everything is fine. And most people can do that. So it is not related to anything that is a toxin or anything that will be a contaminant like this in the product. It is related to the person's own body, own system, own state of their health, and it could be of two factors. One could be just an adjustment in the gut, and in these cases, it's going to be very transient, a few days, and it comes back in order. If it does not come back in order, in most cases, what the situation here is that people oftentimes if we were to ask these questions to the people experiencing this, do they have, for example, do they have gas? Do they have sometimes intestinal cramping? Do they feel tired after a meal? Do they have a tendency to have skin problems or some asthma-like reaction, allergies? And oftentimes people look at you and says, yes, I have these. And oftentimes it's simply because we're having, all of these are linked to a poor digestive tract, a poor intestinal flora. And I will not go into the detail here of what are the repercussions of this, but it's one of the main causes of so many diseases. You know, in the 1930s, 1940s, I had scientific articles where, I'm quoting here almost verbatim, doctors were saying it is universally accepted that dysbiosis, which is a bad intestinal flora, is the cause of 80% of degenerative diseases. And we forgot about this once we developed antibiotics and all kinds of high-tech medical approach. We suddenly, this whole concept became forgotten. But it still remains a reality. Our bodies have not changed since then. A good intestinal flora is paramount for good health. And again, it's not the place here on this call to go into detail of it. But if you don't have a good intestinal flora, then stem enhance, because of some of the compounds it contains, like other things, like wheatgrass juice, like beet juice, things like this may very well trigger exactly the same thing. So in these cases, I will say, stop taking stem enhance for maybe 2 weeks, and instead do a very aggressive probiotics treatment, Acidophilus and Bifidus. There are good probiotics on the marketplace. Go to health food store and take whatever would be the equivalent of at least 10 billion microorganisms, if not 20 billion microorganisms a day, and do this for about 2 weeks. And then after that, slowly reintroduce a stem enhance in your diet, and you'll see that that there will not be any problem. And it will have helped your health anyway in many ways, beyond just the fact of removing this kind of experience with stem enhance. It's going to help many aspects of human your health.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Christian. We all appreciate you taking the time to share this information with us. And I would like to remind everyone that if you have questions, please send them to productsupport@stemtechhealth.com. And both this call and tonight's corporate call, which is at 9 p.m. Eastern, will be available to everyone to listen to on your StemTech website. So thank you, Christian. We appreciate your time, and thank you, everyone, for joining us on this call, and we hope to see you all on the corporate call this evening. Have a great day, everyone, and thank you again.
Thank you, Sharon.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. Now.